David Krejci with less than 15 seconds to go. Milan Lucic barrels into the attacking zone. Thornton gives him a bump. Lucic in the corner, 5 seconds to go. Lucic back to McQuaid. He's got to hurry. The wrist shot tip scores! David Krejci with 8-tenths of a second left. The Bruins outshot 39-17, and they're going to win it literally in the last second.
Marchand to Bergeron, the drive save, rebound is loose. Sagan kicks it loose. Bergeron scores! Patrice Bergeron with the point of the dagger at their throats. They rip it out of Toronto's hands and kill the beast. The Boston Bruins have won it after being 3-0 in the third.
TSN 1200.
Oh, it's always good to hear Bruins highlights when it comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Welcome back to TSN Mornings on TSN 1200. Labor Sage in for the vacationing JR. Sean Simpson and Big Red Cam here with you. And a couple of highlights there, Simmer, of David Krejci, Patrice Bergeron, and the Boston Bruins, who add a couple of guys back to their lineup that I'm not sure we thought were going to come back to Boston, but with one-year deals for David Krejci, Patrice Bergeron, they also got Pavel Zacha done before arbitration. What do you make of the Boston Bruins? Are a team that I think a lot of people feel might be competing with Ottawa when it comes to a 7, 8, 9 playoff spot, and the Bruins just got a lot better.
Yeah, I find it hard to gauge, Lee, in a sense of we like to do our forecasting, recognition of David Krejci at $1 million, Patrice Bergeron at a base of 2.5 to basically 5, and then you added in Zach at 3.5. They basically added three players for the price of Patrice Bergeron, right? And that's what you're talking about, $9.5 million. So, hey, they're a better hockey team. There's no doubt. Now, David Krejci, 36 years old, played a year in the Czech Republic, played the Olympics coming back. I just don't know. Again, when guys go away like that at that age, he's a very intelligent player. Should be fine, Lee. Mm-hmm. But there is no doubt when I look at this. And the question is the health of the Boston Bruins. As far as the depth chart, it's a clear number. It's four teams in the Atlantic for me. And then until I see more out of Detroit and Ottawa, hey, Boston has put themselves on paper right back with Toronto, right closer to Florida and Tampa Bay. I mean, that's the four teams, and they're going to be a tough out right now. What we don't know is all the health and how it's going to come together. But for what that group and what that top line brings in Boston, that's one of the best lines in hockey. Now, we'll see with the coaching change. I'm a big Jim Montgomery fan. Swayman showed me with Ullmark last year that they got good goaltending. So, like I said, Ottawa, I know we'll get there. As to when they get there, I'm not sure. But if I'm sitting here in early August, Lee, I'm looking at that and saying, hey, there's a clear four. Now, what can Detroit and Ottawa do to try to bounce one of those teams? And I think Florida's come back to the pack, and Boston's a big-time wild card. But as far as the pride, the experience, the power play, the health, everything else, like I said, when healthy, that's still a very good hockey team.
Yeah, and I think where the questions arise for the Boston Bruins is not necessarily the depth of their roster, but what, Marchand's going to be out till December at least. Charlie McAvoy is going to be out till December at least. They have some significant injuries right now.
Can they pull a Tampa? You know, and they don't have the depth, obviously. So that is the question of where can they be. But when I do put a healthy Patrice Bergeron back in the lineup, his ability to lead, to pull the rest of the group along, yeah, I still like their chances, Lee. But it's still, hey, you know, like I say, you know, and you know, one of the other big things. It would be naive that David Krejci left for a year. Bruce Cassidy get let go. He comes back, and we love Butchie.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what's a guy like DeBrus going to look like? And I'm not a DeBrus fan, but he certainly has made all the excuses that the coach is too hard on him. So,
yeah
there's a lot of moving parts here with the Boston Bruins. We don't even talk about Taylor Hall. You know, some of the other parts of, like I said, at the end of the day, for where they're at in their physical maturity, it's still just a really, really good hockey team. But the question is, as you said, the health, the depth. They don't have a whole lot else, and they can kind of continue to kind of cart it back. We'll see. Like I said, I like their top nine, their top four, and their goaltending pair, but that's all predicated on when they're going to be healthy.
Yeah, you look at this lineup, and people starting to count the Boston Bruins out, where, oh, they're a team that's going to fall. I think Boston, Washington, Pittsburgh, people put in that, well, they got to fall off at some time. they're going to fall off this year. It's always the next year that those teams are going to, you know, take a step back. Now, the health is a huge thing. If Marchand and McAvoy, who are two of their very best players, don't get back.
Absolutely. And McAvoy might even be more than Marchand. And that's saying a lot in a sense, Lee, that Marchand's a great hockey player. But as the defense is slowly kind of, you're talking about one of the best two-way defenders in the game. Like Charlie McAvoy might be a top-10 defenseman in the National Hockey League. When you take a workhorse like that out of your lineup, what is that going to mean to the rest of the group? Well, we'll tune in October. But, you know, and Marchand, like I said, that dynamic first line, you move it around. But McAvoy is probably the bigger loss just because they're not super deep on the back end.
Yeah, and they have, and how do you pronounce his name? Grizzlick. Like, he's a pretty good defenseman.
Yeah.
He's going to be out at least until November 1st and maybe a little bit longer than that. So they're going to have to get by in October and November and kind of hold their water. They don't have to be great, but they can't kind of find themselves completely
Is that a term like for a woman having a baby?
Hold their water?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's necessarily the case.
So what are you saying then? I don't like, and we're just having some fun, Lee. But if I'm holding, like, I don't want my water to break. I'm having a baby. Are you referencing that they're going to have to, like, you know, they build a dam to hold off the water? Is that what you're saying?
They're going to have to keep even.
Okay.
Simmer. Okay.
No, I'm just asking for clarification because it's not a bad one. I mean, I understand that, you know, if a woman, you know, you're far enough along in your pregnancy, you know, you don't want your water to break. So I think you've actually been very creative there.
Yeah.
But
it's just a term that I
I know what you're saying.
I've used that.
But here's the other part to remember, Lee, is that when does the season start? What are we talking, the 12th of October, 10th of October?
Yeah.
Like, you know, okay, how often do we see that guys actually come back a little bit earlier? So what if all of a sudden those guys are back after the first 3 weeks of the season? Do you know what I mean? If this is a normal, not even normal, but if we're talking absolutely where you're starting early October and you've played, you know, 25, 30 games before they're back, I'm kind of looking at this and saying, you know what, I wouldn't be surprised if the whole crew's back together by American Thanksgiving, and that might only be 15 games into your year, right? And if you even hung around 500 at that point, you're probably in pretty good shape.
Holding your water at 500. Yeah.
Well, exactly.
Absolutely. That's what I mean.
And here's the other part, Lee, and I think for Ottawa, to Detroit, to Buffalo, even Florida with some changes, it's also the unraveling of these groups of, what point are they going to kind of hit their promise and their stride, right? I feel like Buffalo has Ottawa's right there as well, but, you know, Buffalo didn't make a lot of changes, where Detroit on paper, I really like what they did, but how long does it take for all that to come together under a new coach as well, right? You know, I think these are all the factors as we're trying to, other than it just looks like the division, you know, is going to be a whole lot more exciting. And at the end of the day, where does a team like Montreal kind of fit into that? I assume last place, but...
Yeah. But I think my point here with Boston, and I just looked at the schedule, they do play 22 times before the end of November.
Okay, yeah, that's a lot. That's a quarter of your schedule.
Yeah, so it's at that point where you just can't get so far behind that when these guys start coming back, you're having to win, you know, two of every three games for the rest
of
the year.
Yeah, I would assume their goal, you know, if you honestly asked Jim Montgomery, hey, if we could play 500 hockey till we get the band back together, I'll take my chance as a final 60.
But at that point, you think they're better than Ottawa right now?
When they're fully healthy?
Yeah.
Better is a strong word, but when you look at the maturity of the group, absolutely. You know, until we see, and I know Norris and Batherson and Tkachuk had real good years last year, Lee, but until they take over hockey games, absolutely dominate on a power play. Now, you're focusing in DeBrincat along with Stutzla. Like, there's a ton of growth in Ottawa. Ottawa will pass them at some point, Lee, but I can't say that as we sit here in August until it all comes together, right? And, you know, and the other part tactically from Ottawa's side, they've still got to figure out how to play in their own end a whole lot better. That's one of the things that Bruce Cassidy did a great job. Even in the transition of their defense, they were always a really smart defensive team, very, very structured, and a power play that has so much skill and so much chemistry that there's not much you can do against. So, yeah, absolutely I'd have them ahead of them when they're healthy, but like I say, Ottawa will make up the track. It's just a question of when.
Yeah.
Hope their water doesn't break.
No. Especially early in those first 22 games here for the Bruins. I mean, a huge, huge couple of months holding their water in October and November for them.
Oh.
But you look at their lineup, and you're not wrong. It's a pretty deep lineup. And
they're very maturely, and that's one thing when teams come in, and that's the part for Ottawa. Ottawa's good. Ottawa's got a lot of talent, but there's still a lot of young guys physically where I can't make that up. And Boston came in last year, and they had some guys from the American Hockey League that were just, you know, skating circles around the Ottawa players because you do look at that, and that I have fun with that boys to men. And I don't know, like Ottawa may all show up this year, and you're like, wow, you know, that's how quickly it can happen. But until you see that, that's a different part of the ability. And like I said, it's just respecting any team that has Patrice Bergeron setting the tone for it. A coaching change that's fresh and new. We'll see how that does with Jimmy Montgomery. But yeah, lots of factors there that it would be very naive to think all of a sudden, well, Ottawa's just going to roll in. But that's also why we're excited for October.
Yeah, there's a couple of teams in the National Hockey League that I thought were going to, you know, maybe fall apart and, you know, would have a difficult time, you know, maintaining, and would they have to start over? The Calgary Flames were one of them, right? Where they lost Johnny Gaudreau for nothing. Matt Tkachuk wants out. They're going to have to start a full rebuild. Well, I kind of thought the same thing in Boston, where, you know, it's no Bergeron, no Krejci. You got Marchand and McAvoy at least out until December. Like, what are they going to do? And all of a sudden, Bergeron comes back and DeBrusque doesn't want to be traded anymore. And now Krejci comes back and you get those guys back, that they suddenly look like they're a contender. Their lineup, and between Pastrnak and Marchand and Hall and Charlie Coyle and DeBrusque and Pavel Zacha and Foligno and Bergeron and Krejci, like, it's a pretty deep forward group.
Yeah, and you also go to the summertime when Barry Trotz got let go and then Bruce Cassidy. You also felt like, watching from the outside, that both of them were rudderless ships. Now, in the island, I think a lot of the curiosity is on Nazem Kadri. And again, on paper, when healthy, that's a good hockey team. That's a playoff hockey team. And I think the same thing in Boston is that, hey, you end up switching out Bruce Cassidy. I'm super biased, but when I heard the names of Nate Lehman, David Quinn, Jay Leach as a coach, I thought, man, what a step back. But knowing Jimmy Montgomery and having a lot of respect for the fact that he's coached, he's regrouped and done it, but the kind of line that he brings or what he's able to do, I think this is a pretty good transition, you know, as close to Butchie as you're going to get. So I'm not as down where I thought, man, you bring in some college coach that's never coached in the National Hockey League, you're just asking for trouble.
Right.
So, and we'll see with the Islanders, you know, from a coaching standpoint, if Kadri ends up going. But there's no doubt that both Don Sweeney and Brad Treliving have done a pretty good recovery in the last few months here. If you're a Boston Bruins fan, you know, hey, you were really upset when Bruce Cassidy was let go. And I think still look at that, and he maximized, but if they felt it was time. But as far as the roster went healthy, and like I said, we'll see with David Krejci. You don't lose skill, you don't lose hockey sense. We'll see where his pace is at. But at 36 years old, what's also cool about him, Lee, I don't know if you realize he's only played 962 games in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool that he's going to cruise back and probably reach 1,000. And I do wonder if that was in the back of his mind a little bit. That's a nice milestone to reach, and especially doing it all with, I can still remember when he turned pro with Providence in the American League. To do it from, you know, start to finish probably with the Boston Bruins is pretty cool.
And the point you made earlier about Bruce Cassidy, you know, I think people are pretty biased towards him here, that they love him. He's from here, and he's been a very good coach.
Yeah, the Bruins
made the playoffs every year under Bruce Cassidy. But I also don't, you can't look past where DeBrusque wanted out, now he's coming back.
Yeah.
Krejci left, now he's coming back. I have no idea about Patrice Bergeron and what he would feel about something like that. But some guys that didn't seem like they wanted a part of it, now with Jim Montgomery, are coming back to kind of take a, I want to say a last run, but certainly for Krejci, it probably is.
Yeah.
And for the other guys to think, okay, you know what? Fresh start, new coach, guys are coming back, let's go. It does seem a little bit fresh now that Bruce Cassidy is left.
Yeah, no, I agree. And as you said, now you also look at it, and this is the interesting part. Cam Neely is very hands-on, and if you do, allow the inmates to run things, okay, I understand that. But the results are there, the maximization of the players and what Bruce was able to accomplish.
Yep.
We'll see if Monty can do the same thing. And like I say, that is really the fine line. And I won't say with David Krejci, because I don't know how much of that was that or just him wanting to go back to the Czech Republic and then coming back. But in the case of Jake DeBrusque, man, you better put up here. You know, you've been whining for years now, and even, you know, through lots of other outlets with his dad being in the media talking about how hard the coach is on you. Well, let's find out what you're all about here, because I think a lot of people are confused as to Jake DeBrusk, what he sees himself as a player versus what people that want to see him as more of a power forward kind of sees himself as a skill guy. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's one thing to be able to say that. And while that might be true, well, now you have an opportunity to prove with a different guy.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. And the other one, and just again, it's funny because I'm a big fan of Butchie, a big fan of Jim Montgomery. The other thing with the Boston Bruins, Lee, if you track through, and this is where you can say they're in bad situations, coach is too hard, like name one player that's left Boston in the last 5 years that's gone on to do anything. You know, go back to Donato, and I could be wrong on this, you know, and Char was certainly at the end of his career, but look at all the players there, and they didn't make it, and the coach doesn't want to play the young players. No, maybe the young players just weren't good, and certainly the poor drafting has really caught up with them, and at the end of the day, the transition to Charlie McAvoy, like Bruce Cassidy has molded him into one of the premier defenders in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, I can't disagree. And you look at players that have, you know, are now 6-7 years into that window after being drafted and what the Bruins could have had, right? I mean, and look, the Senators are partially guilty as well, drafting Colin White in that 21st spot in the 2015 draft, but they also got Thomas Chabot, which, you know, is one of their franchise core guys.
And there was a long time where, you know, the hockey world, including us, at least as far as his junior eligibility, thought he was a real good pick, you know. It didn't work out for different reasons, but it certainly doesn't come close to Sinishin's Laborel and DeBrusk when you look at what was around there.
Oh, no. I mean, Barzell and Kyle Connor and Thomas Chabot and Brock Besser and Travis Konechny and, like,
And Boston historically, like, you think about Pasternak, you think about McAvoy, you know, historically is drafted very well. The one that is always, I think, for people, Lee, is the most perplexing is how you went to an ice hockey match and decided that Zaboral was a better player than Thomas Chabot. Like that's the one that people always are like, who was that scout? And what was he drinking, or did he confuse the players, or what was going on there?
And you know, you've been doing this for a long time. How difficult is it when guys play together to know who might be propping up who? Because Chabot and Zaboral did play together in St. John.
No, it's a great point. You know, when you go back to the great St. John line that had Huberdeau, they had the center that was drafted, was it Gillies or whatever, in the first round by Minnesota. I went to their training camp that year, and you could see this guy's never going to play. Yeah. His edges are terrible. I think they had a Russian kid there as well, drafted by Washington. Never turned out, so absolutely. One of the fun ones, and I go back to Ehrhoff and Schubert, when they played together for Germany, and you had the big skating Schubert and you had Ehrhoff, and yeah, you're trying to wonder. And I'm going to go in the Wayback Machine. One of the best duos of all time in international hockey was Tuomo Ruutu along with Koivu, where, you know, and Ruutu was a star player. Injuries came up, but you're right, Lee. I mean, there's circumstances for sure of, hey, and I don't care what level you're at, making sure, and Ottawa fans don't have to look any further than Jonathan Chichu. I mean, how that fella scored 50 goals is a compliment to Joe Thornton. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, understand what you're getting and who you play. One of the rules in pro hockey for years was don't take anybody that Chris Pronger's played with, because if you think you're getting a good player, you're just getting a byproduct of how good, you know, it's like Ray Bourque back in the day, right?
Yeah.
You could put anybody with him. So don't think you're getting that player unless you're getting Ray Bourque in the same deal.
Yeah, no question about it. And it's different in pro hockey than it is in junior hockey. But, man, and who did Shea Weber play with? Didn't he play with, back in junior?
He was drafted out of Tier 2, was he not?
Shea Weber?
Yeah.
Didn't he play in Kelowna?
Oh, was he playing in Kelowna when he got drafted? Okay.
No, I could be mistaken.
But it was a great pick. Yeah. No, oh, but, gosh, there's so many stories.
And maybe I'm thinking of just Shea Weber and Suter playing together and then wondering which guy was.
In hockey for years was who's the better player, Redden or Chara, right? I mean, a lot of people thought Wade Redden was.
That's a really good point.
They don't want to say this anymore, but, oh, yeah, Lee. And I go back to the great Kamloops teams and watching Ginland, Doan, and Darcy Tucker's on the team. And Darcy Tucker was the best player on that hockey team and had to change his role in the NHL. So, oh, no, there's some circumstances for sure where, you know, you try to understand and the evolution, the maturity, and all the other things that kind of come with it.
Just looking at that draft again, and I remember being at the draft. I was there with Ian 2015 in Fort Lauderdale. Great place to have a draft, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, just at the time, and look, nobody's an expert, But when those picks came along and you understood that some of the guys behind had some really high upside and that were, you know, a little bit higher in people's rankings, and having a chance to see some of those guys myself, Zboril, DeBrusk, and Sinishin picked back to back to back. And in that deal, or the deal that didn't happen, was that the Boston Bruins, they had a deal to get up and try and get to the number.
They wanted Noah Hanifin, right?
They wanted Noah Hanifin.
Out of Boston College.
Yep, and if they were able to get up into that spot, then they were going to, and Carolina said no, they took him. And so Boston kept all of their picks, and you look right after the 13, 14, 15 slots that Boston took, Zboril, DeBrusk, and Sinishin, and it reads like this. Matt Barzal, Kyle Connor, Thomas Chabot, the other Svechnikov that Detroit took, but Joel Eriksson-Ek, who's a pretty good player, Colin White, Ilya Samsonov, the goaltender, Brock Besser, Travis Konecny, Jack Roslovic. Like, there are some really good players after Boston picked all those three guys. Imagine if Thomas Chabot and Matt Barzal and Kyle Connor all played on the Bruins right now.
Yeah, and even if you just grab two of the three, Lee, but you're right. And as I said, Boston historically, like, where Pastrnak was taken, and they're also circumstances. Not that you're not prepared for the draft, but if you are so focused on moving up to a player, did that throw you off a little bit? And I always think back to Puljujarvi with Edmonton, mm-hmm. where they totally prepared that all of a sudden everything was locking it down. Columbus, Jarmo Kekalainen, Ville Sirin, of course, are going to take him. Then we're going to take Pierre-Luc Dubois. And all of a sudden, Dubois off the board. Mm-hmm. Were you ready for that? When the Rangers hopped up and won the draft lottery, I said that at the time. Hey, does that mean that they're as much in love with Lafreniere as, say, Ottawa would be with the Franco background? You know, would they look at that? Well, they would certainly look at it differently right now. I mean, there would be a legitimate debate as to whether Timmy Stutzla would be number one in that draft, right? You know, are you always prepared for some of those things?
Yeah.
Philadelphia with Nolan Patrick and Heischer for New Jersey and Philly instead of Heskinen or Makar or Elias Pettersson. So, yeah, lots of interesting circumstances, Lee, of, you know, like I say, you get focused in a whole year of where you're picking and who's going to be there. And, you know, sometimes you're not as prepared as you should be.
Josh Norris, 19th in that draft in 2017, that you talk about Heiskanen and Makar, Pettersson, 3, 4, 5. Josh Norris was taken 19th.
And also interesting in that draft, I believe, is that, you know, Ottawa was pretty smart to get out from underneath. It wasn't a great trade with Colorado. But what was the fellow that they drafted in the first round? I don't think has gone on to do much, right? Drafted right around Norris. That they flipped out in the Duchesne deal?
That they flipped out? Oh, Shane Bowers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And people talk, he has not played an NHL game.
No, and it doesn't look like he's trending towards that. So.
Yeah. And people always worry about, oh my God, you gave up a first-round pick, and oh my God, I can't believe you gave up on this guy, and then turns out, as you said, kind of 5 years later, that that's the case. I just want to go back to that 2015 draft for just a second, because drafted 11th in that draft was Lawson Crouse, and he just got himself a new deal with the Arizona Coyotes. 5 years, $21.5 million yesterday. I've never loved Lawson Crouse, but understood what type of player he is. What do you think about this deal, an average annual value of 4.3?
Yeah, I don't watch him enough, Lee, but I always kind of looked at a big lethargic kid. From what I understand, he's got a tremendous work ethic and a very likable kid. But, you know, these are funny contracts. This is still paying for potential, would you agree? You know, last year he had a decent year. Was it 20 goals to 14 assists?
Yes.
You know, so, you know, just okay. But I haven't watched him enough, but I kind of look at a club that's transitioning and saying, hey, we're going to lay a little money down on a young player. But I've never been a huge fan of his. So we'll see how it turns out. And then you look at a guy like Kaapo Kakko, where you're basically given a 2-year deal, not a whole lot of money. To my point of some of these high picks, how do you transition? Do you go big Josh Norris deals? Do you go medium on Lawson Crouse? Or do you go the case of Kaapo Kakko? You know, they're all interesting. And at the end of the day, they all get an opportunity to get paid. And a lot of times, in the case of Lawson Crouse and Kakko, well, Kakko, no. But in Lawson Crouse, it's, hey, quite simply, I think they're still looking for the potential. I think they're still, he is a big, big boy, is he not? You know, that he's going to come into his own and somehow turn into, obviously, a top six player in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're looking for. And you're right, he is a kind of a big boy, but they got him done to a 5-year deal to avoid arbitration that was scheduled coming up next week. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with more. Lee Versage in for JR, Sean Simpson, and Big Red Cam here with you on TSN Mornings on TSN 1200. Welcome back to TSN Mornings on TSN 1200. Lee Versage in for vacationing JR. Simmer and Big Red are here. We got a text in. It said Bowers had already been drafted. Pick Ottawa sent to Colorado as Bowen Byram in the number 4 slot. But Shane Bowers had been dealt earlier by the Ottawa Senators. And Simmer, coming up on Hard Knocks. It debuts tonight in Canada. I think it's going to be difficult to be able to pick up unless you are kind of one of those smart techie guys. But, and I know Cam will be, because Cam's favorite team is the Detroit Lions. And it debuts tonight, the first edition of Hard Knocks, featuring the Detroit Lions. Are you interested in this? Because Dan Campbell certainly is a guy that is unique. He's got a lot to say. He's got some different ways of saying it. And for a team that doesn't win very much, I don't know. I'm trying to get away from Cam. Like, I know Cam's very interested. It's his favorite team. But if Detroit's not your favorite team, are you interested in watching the Lions?
You know what? Some of the footage, Lee, anything behind the scenes, I find to be very interesting. And he's a very likable fella. I just feel like he runs out of vocabulary very quickly. And that really trying hard, and I don't follow them enough. Like, doesn't feel like they've turned the corner at all. Still feels like a hot mess. So, like I said, I'd watch a tad of it. And like I said, he's a likable character. That just extra hard try as you enter into year two, and if it starts to go sideways, and it just gets old, right? Then the player's like, enough. Like, I actually need solutions here. I don't need a biting off kneecaps and all the other stuff. And like I said, there's a refreshing component to him. But they've been bad for so long. So I'd watch a tad, but I'm certainly not going all over the place to try to find it.
Cam, I'm going to give you like 30 seconds here. Why should people care or watch Hard Knocks about Dan Campbell and fighting off hyenas as he was talking to his season ticket holders on the weekend? What is it about this team that you like, that you think is interesting enough for someone who's not a fan of the Lions, but a fan of the behind the scenes like me and Simmer and a fan of the NFL to be able to watch?
Well, I think they've done a good job of filling up that locker room with high character guys. One of those guys being Jamal Williams, a guy that figures to not get the bulk of the touches with DeAndre Swift, hopefully being back and healthy, but a high character guy coming over from Green Bay. And speeches like this that you will hear on Hard Knocks if you're able to listen, I think are part of why this team has a lot of positive momentum in their direction.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Simmer, like, if you're not pumped up to watch Detroit after that.
No, and you appreciate that stuff, Lee, and it's a fine line. Now, I just picturing Jared Goff probably not spending more than 3 minutes in the locker room before he's into his Lamborghini and driving off. The unfortunate for them is that's the last person you can have on your team as you're trying to rebuild your culture. You know, he is all about money. As soon as he got the money in L.A., and that would be the part. And I'll fast forward to the point where Dan Campbell strangles him, not to death, but at least a tap out. that's hard, man. Like, that guy right there, that's the last guy I want quarterback in my team as I'm trying to transition from a losing culture.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. Interesting to watch. A terrible division. Green Bay, the top, and then the rest of the teams kind of competing to be, you know, the second best of three bad teams in that division. But they do have some intrigue, I guess, because people feel bad for the Clevelands, the Detroits of the world that have just been in this perpetual, we know they're not going to be any good. There's no reason to really believe that they can take the next step, even if they get a little bit better. And I wonder how much intrigue, because people start to feel bad for these teams, and the casual fan kind of roots for them on the side because they've just lost for so long.
Yeah, it's interesting, Lee, because I agree with you. And also part of that, when you go to that town, Buffalo and Cleveland, a big part of it as well has been the economic turndown, right, of cities that at one point, maybe not as much Buffalo, but I think people would be a little surprised Cleveland post-World War II was, you know, one of the economic engines of the United States. Detroit, of course, we know the history of the automotive industry, so it's that. But I almost feel like for years that Cincinnati and Detroit sat so low, but Detroit low enough where I'm not saying people don't feel sorry for them, but I don't even know if they're on anybody's radar. You know what I mean? Like, you'd like to see it where Cleveland, I feel like those guys are hardcore, right? I mean, you know, that you absolutely were. Maybe it's even just a Michigan football thing.
One thing I can guarantee is that no one in Detroit wants you to feel bad for them. If maybe you should feel bad for them, but no one in Detroit wants your pity. I think that they're on the mend, and when you look at their football team as a whole, there are some things to be excited about. Their draft TJ Hawkinson, obviously, Aiden Hutchinson. And Jamal Williams, the wide receiver that people are very high on. And then you bring in DJ Shark from the Jaguars. So I think Amon-Ra St. Brown, the breakout rookie from last year. So all of a sudden that wide receiver room looks really good. Some exciting things on defense. And I mentioned Jamal Williams, kind of the second featured back with DeAndre Swift. Like all of a sudden those skill positions are looking pretty tasty. So
I guess my side, Cam, is that I want Buffalo to win a Super Bowl right now.
Yeah.
I want Cleveland because there's more familiarity, everything they've gone through. The Lions have they've just been bad. It's been there. Even Cincinnati, because they were decent when I was younger, you kind of like, man, at what point are they going to kind of come back? And under Lewis, they actually had some pretty good teams. Just couldn't do anything come playoff time. But yeah, it's just funny with the Lions. I don't hate them, but it doesn't resonate the same for me. Like I said, where Cleveland, especially Buffalo right now, like I think there'd be nothing better. Of all the four major sports, if you said, now we'll remove the Ottawa Senators, but who would you like to see win a championship? It'd be Buffalo Bills for me, Lee. Like that'd be a team. I just think that would be great for the fans there. And because of the passion, they bring it all the time. They support the team no matter what. And it's been a long, hard road from those great teams that broke your heart losing four straight Super Bowls.
Well, maybe the greatest fan base in any sport. Right now, the fan base of the Buffalo Bills.
Well, the Patriots as well.
No, I wouldn't say that.
It's a joke. But no, you're right. Well, I mean, greatest boy.
That Josh Allen supporting his grandmother, welcoming them back from regular season games at the airport and playoff games at the airport, it just feels a little bit different in Buffalo.
Yeah. But I think as far as fan bases, and please turn off your radio right now, are not going to want to hear this.
No.
Like one of the greatest fan bases in sports is the Toronto Maple Leafs because, you know, for be taken down the road into the woodshed, they will have so many times to stay. I always think back to Cubs fans, to Red Sox fans, to Rangers fans, Lee, where part of losing almost became part of your DNA, where a lot of other markets, they wouldn't show up. But they kind of were united in bonding, and I think the loyalty there has been tremendous. And when you kind of look at where it's been, but it's just fun debate lots of places.
Well, right? I agree with you about the loyalty. I don't, like, if you talk to Buffalo Bills fans, it's kind of like the journey is just as much as getting there. And not that they don't want to win, of course they want to win, but they're so proud of their football team, and there's a lot of optimism around that fan base. I don't think if you talk to Leafs fans, there's much optimism around, we have a good team, but we know it'll happen. They'll lose in the first round of the playoffs.
No, I understand
but a lot of negativity.
But at the point where they got Tavares and were there, if the Buffalo Bills crash and burn in the playoffs and in a couple of years, Lee, have that same conversation again, or a couple of injuries. Von Miller is not very good. You know, I understand, but there was a spot where the Leafs, the rebuild, you got Matthews and Marner, and now Tavares signs over, and you got the rest of the group there, that phase. But, it's a sweet spot for Buffalo right now, and they need to bring this home in the next 2 years. That's what I'm looking at, because we know with football, things can change so quickly. Not that their quarterback's going anywhere, but they're there. The division isn't very good. You know, it's there for the taking.
Yep.
The question is now getting through that side with all the great quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. The emergence is going to be really interesting, but it's there, you know. And they were darn close last year. You know, they went toe to toe with with KC, did they not?
Oh, a couple times.
You know, it was a great game. Yeah. And, you know, and they were that close to going to a Super Bowl and didn't work out for you.
Yeah, it looked like they had the game-winning drive until they didn't.
And
right?
then, and that's also where that whole feeling of when you score, some fan bases will be like, ah, it's over. The Buffalo Bills fan that has been well-conditioned over the years is just like a Leafs fan. No, we have a chance to lose this still. And sure enough, you lost it. You know what I mean? That's the tough part. And I don't tell me that you can be as optimistic as you want, but you're absolutely conditioned out if you're a Bills fan.
I agree. And the Frank Wycheck thing, of course, doesn't help with the Music City Miracle. But they've found ways to lose. But I don't know, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know of a fan base that's as optimistic as the Buffalo Bills fan base.
When like going into this year or just overall?
Just overall. When it comes to supporting their team, supporting their city, and understanding, like, they haven't won in so long, but they do all these things in the community. They support their players. They're there for them. Their team seems to be responding to them, and it's a really, really good relationship. And
it's a bit of an Edmonton situation as well, Lee, because there's also a thought of, and we don't hear this talk very often, but a few years ago, possibility of relocation, games playing in Toronto. Like, there are people that are very proud of Western New York, and then, you know, knowing how great some of the areas are. Do you know what I mean? So I think, on lots of levels, and unfortunately, the Sabres have just disappeared. So it's really a one-team market. I think Buffalo, the Sabres can come back into that, but it is all about the Buffalo Bills. That's your pride and joy. There's now an announcement of a new stadium. Do you know what I mean? Where, you know, that's the identity of Western New York. And then the other part, if you spend any time there, which I know you have, is just knowing that, you know, we're not New York City. We're not the Giants. We're not the Jets. We're Western New York.
Oh, we're blue collar.
And that makes up a huge part of the state that, you know, people don't really focus on as much. So, no, I agree with you. And it really is. It's a super, I mean, it really represents what Western New York's all about.
Yeah, blue collar workers. It's not New York City. Between Buffalo and Rochester and Syracuse and some of the hardworking people down there. And
they get crapped on a lot. You know, it's a city that gets a lot of, you know, and if you go to the downtown area, I guess you could argue some of it, but when you get out to the suburbs and you get out to a lot of other areas there, you know, Old Orchard Park, just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, a lot of people retired in the suburbs of Buffalo when it came to hockey. I know you remember John Muckler and Harry Neal and all those people that used to live on like the same street. Scotty Bowman.
Yeah. Oh, no, tons. You were absolutely right. Crew.
But you're right. Yeah. The downtown area. And I know they've revamped it a little bit.
Yeah.
But like there were times where it was a ghost town. Like you just didn't want to be down there.
And no. And you'd stay at the hotel down there and they had a little nightclub in there and a restaurant. And you'd basically go there to the old odd. And then the new building came along. And yeah, you're right. You know, it's just been hard times for it. And much like Mr. Ilitch in Detroit, Pegula, that's one of the things he's tried to do is try to redevelop the waterfront, put a lot of money into his hometown.
Yeah. The difference is people feel bad for Buffalo. Text comes in, underdogs. Nobody feels sorry for the mega-rich Leafs repping corporate Canada. Leafs have never been an underdog.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. Now, I'll say that, though, is that I think Mr. Pegula has taken a lot as well in the sense of, a couple of years ago, you hate them no matter what. Now, you know, okay, when I get my Bills season tickets, I love them. And when I see my Sabres tickets, I hate them. Yeah. Although I think that's turning a bit. But for a guy that came in as a alumni of Penn State and obviously from that area, he tried to put so much money into both of them. And, you know, there's a lot of people at the end of the day, unfortunately, ended up hating him because the results have not been there. And the turnover, right? I mean, that's been the instability of both teams where finally the Bills feel like on every level that they've got a little bit of stability, not to mention a hell of a football team.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of, in Buffalo, I feel like the same thing as far as, you know, maybe basketball in Canada or some of the other things where the fan base, I know they're proud of their team, but there's this whole, you know, we want somebody to like us. We want somebody to appreciate us. We understand how good we are, but the rest of the country, the rest of the league, doesn't appreciate how good it is. And I think the Raptors went through that for a long time. Like how great Toronto is, but nobody really seems to care. And I think people of Buffalo kind of feel that way. They know how great their area is, but they also feel like it's not appreciated. It does get crapped on a lot.
No, and they're tired. Buffalo, well, I shouldn't say that. Vancouver would be the same thing, but Toronto's the only city that Americans actually go to vacation because it's better than the way they live. But you could argue that about Toronto, but you also have Seattle. So that's kind of a moot point.
Hashtag Bills Mafia includes me and Steve Lloyd. Text comes in. I think a lot of people, the Buffalo Bills, just like you, Simmer, for me, if my team doesn't win, and I know some people don't have another team, and I don't have another team, but I would like to see the Buffalo Bills win a Super Bowl my team is out of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then, you know, the Patriots, to me, as a kind of a bandwagon sports fan, I'll still watch all the games, Lee, but it doesn't feel like they're on the verge of anything. Not even sold on kind of the overall, other than I do like Mac Jones. But, I totally agree with you. And I also get to the playoffs. I find it impossible not to cheer for Joe Burrow. Now, in the case of Cleveland, and maybe not even Baker Mayfield, I didn't dislike him. He's no good. Sean Watson, I won't be able to do that. But there's a lot of teams, a lot of stories that I look at and I cheer for. I mean, you look at a guy like Stafford last year, and I was like, okay, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, let's see if he can end up bringing it home. Watching Patrick Mahomes, the young player. Hard not to kind of cheer. I look at Miami and kind of hoping that Tua can figure it out and they can have some fun with it based on a lot of the negativity. So, yeah, I don't even know till the playoffs kind of come around. What I do know is that the NFL always has such a great cross-section of playoff teams that it's just fun to watch every single game, and we can't say that in any other sports these days. Though we were fortunate this year with the National Hockey League. That was the best playoff of my lifetime.
Yeah, always wonder – people who are hardcore fans of one team, that do you root for, or can you get behind another team winning a championship? Like, who's your team that you wouldn't mind seeing win, even though they're not actually your team? And I feel like the Buffalo Bills fall into that category as much as any team.
And I also think the NFL is that they have legitimate rivals, where I don't really feel like in hockey we have that anymore. You know, basketball, I can't even think. Baseball, I don't even think the Red Sox and Yankees hate themselves. But when it comes to that, if you're a Baltimore Ravens fan, I do not want under any circumstance to see the Pittsburgh Steelers win. If, of course, the Dallas Cowboys would be the great example of all time. I mean, most of the league just wants to see them lose, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's different, where that draws people in versus turning the TV off. Like, I think a lot of people, when the Leafs are on, they turn it off. The National Football League, well, first of all the games are great in the playoffs. And I'm either rooting for somebody, or I despise the fact that the Dallas Cowboys are playing, or the Giants, or the Washington football team. Do you know what I mean? And that is different. And that just speaks to the popularity, the divisional setup that they've had for years, where, you know, you're talking about rivalries over the last 50 years, right, that are real. Like, I remember a few years ago, I thought Seattle and San Francisco, when they were both really good, I thought that was must-see TV. I remember thinking, you know, that's a game outside of watching my Pats that I have to turn on. And, you know, the other sports have a really hard time creating that. And I think basketball even more now, where it's really more about the players than it is necessarily about the franchises, right?
Yeah, I would agree. And you're absolutely right, Simmer, that I've always been a big proponent of this, that it's okay to cheer for teams not to win. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you have to go out and that's all that you do. But at the same time, if the Philadelphia Eagles are on, I want them to lose.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And that's the fun part, because that has legitimate history, right? Now, you've picked the evil team, you know, which that's what people feel. You either absolutely love or despise. There's no middle ground. Well, maybe I'm middle ground with the Cowboys, but you know what I mean? And that just, that there's such a, like, we all grew up, and I grew up where that conference represented the best of football. You know, the hatred of the Eagles, or how nasty their fans were, the Giants, you know, had Joe Gibbs and the Redskins at the time, and then you had Dallas and everything. They represent America's team. Like, we kind of feasted on that division as kids, right? Like, that was the gold standard for basically the National Football League at the time.
Lee is a lifelong Dolphins fan. I will never, repeat, never cheer for the Bills. You can pay me $10 million. Yeah. I don't want them to win anything. Mm. That's from Dave biking to work in Ottawa, who then stopped again on his bike to say, well, okay, maybe $10 million.
Okay. And Dave, that's awesome if you're biking in. I'm just picturing from old North Manitic and people that end up doing the trails there. And if you're tuning in, listening to us, that's awesome. We can keep you company. And that is, like I said, and it's not a, you know, I do think, and you get a little carried away with, like, hating teams or hating players. I'm just having fun with you in the middle of summer, Lee, but I understand the rivalry, you know, and I understand for the passionate Sens fan that went through those Leafs things.
Yeah.
I do not want at any point in my life to see them have any success.
Well,
you know
one of the greatest games I've ever watched, and I do believe this, and you're right. I have a little fun with it too sometimes, but I do believe this. Sports needs heroes, but they also need villains.
Oh, for sure.
And if you can have both, that's the best thing for the sport. One of the greatest games I ever watched was Game 7 of 2013 with the Bruins down 4-1 with 10 and a half minutes to go. And I mean that sincerely. It brings me so much joy to watch that and understand that the first goal they got to get to 4-2 was goalie interference. Nobody cared. I didn't care. No one else cared. But James Reimer got run over. No problem at all. Let's get the Bruins get back in the game here. Let's get some excitement. They tie the game. They win it in overtime. I could watch that game a million times, yeah. Simmer. Yeah, why? Because sports needs villains.
No, and I think the instant rivalry in a couple of plays here, the instant rivalry on the Greiba hit, on Lars Eller.
Yep.
And then the other one, and not even by fault of the team, but the sway in the Joe Pavelski play with Vegas the day. Yeah. And it was all on the officials, but the hatred was on, right? Where they're defining moments, and you need a little bit of violence, a little bit of hate, just like Darcy Tucker and his whole crew brought back in the day to be able to take it next level. And that series with Montreal, I knew it was going to be good, but all bets were off. When that minute that hit happened, oh my God, that thing just went next level.
People consider that one of the best games, one of the best series in Senators history. Why? Because it was a rival, because you had the hit, and then you had the brawl.
Yeah, and you won.
And you won, and you won the brawl. Yeah. You won the series. You won everything.
No series is one of the greatest ever unless you win, Lee.
Right.
Those Leafs series could have been historical had Ottawa somehow found a way to win. Yeah.
Cody the Breadman's also in as fellow Dolphins fan. I agree with the bike god Dave down with the Bills from Cody the Breadman. So a couple of people not loving the Bills, but they are Dolphins fans, and they will hurt again this year until they get Tom Brady as their quarterback at the beginning of 2023.
Tua looks good in camp.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. Tom Brady will be the quarterback. Mark this one down on tape. He will be the quarterback of the Miami Dolphins. Not this year, but the following year. We'll take a break, get a 580 CFRA news update, and come back with more here on TSM Mornings on TSN 1200.